fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. We're now 57 days away to the kickoff of the World Cup football tournament in Russia. And how about another fun World Cup fact for our Voice of America listeners? 57 also is the number of different goal scorers for Argentina at various World Cups, spanning 84 years from Luis Monti's opener against France at the 1930 finals to Angel Di Maria's extra time winner against Switzerland at Brazil 2014. Luis Monti died in 1983 at the age of 82. And here's a fun World Cup fact about Monti. He has the distinction of having played in two World Cup final matches with two different national teams. In 1930, Monti played for his native Argentina, which lost to host Uruguay 4-2 in the World Cup final. And in 1934, thanks to his family's Italian heritage, Monti played for Italy. And this time around, Monti was on the winning team. Host Italy defeated Czechoslovakia 2-1 in extra time in the 1934 World Cup final. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. The Council of Southern Africa Football Associations says all 14 of its member countries will participate in this year's COSAFA Cup tournament. South Africa will host the regional competition from May 27th until June 9th, when the final will be played at the Peter Mokaba Stadium in Polokwane. Host South Africa, defending champions Zimbabwe, Zambia, Namibia, Lesotho, and Swaziland are the highest seeds for the COSAFA Cup, and they'll begin play at the quarterfinal stage. In the quarterfinals, South Africa will play the winner of Group A, which is made up of the Comoros Islands, Mozambique, Madagascar, and the Seychelles. Zimbabwe will meet the winner of Group B, which has Angola, Botswana, Malawi, and Mauritius. In the two other quarterfinal matchups, Zambia will play Namibia, and Lesotho will take on Swaziland. South Africa also hosted last year's COSAFA Cup tournament. In the 2017 final, Zimbabwe beat Zambia 3-1 at the Royal Bafokeng Stadium near Rustenburg, South Africa. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In more African football news, the president of the Democratic Republic of Congo's Football Association, Constant Omari, has been taken into custody as part of a probe into embezzlement. Omari also is a member of the FIFA Council and is a vice president with the Confederation of African Football, CAF. He was detained along with Barthélemy Okito, the DRC Sports Ministry Secretary General, and two vice presidents in the Football Association, Roger Bondembe and Theobald Binamungu. A lawyer for the four men told the French news agency they're being questioned over the embezzlement of $1 million earmarked for the organization of matches in African competitions. Turning to African athletics, some of the continent's greatest distance runners are in the British capital to compete in Sunday's London Marathon. Ahead of the big race, the energetic Andy Edwards caught up with the defending women's champion from Kenya. Here's Andy.
There are understandably a lot of expectations for the elite women's race, and indeed around last year's winner, Mary Kaichani of Kenya, ran 2:17.01, not only an African record, but the fastest ever by a woman in a women's only race. Mary, given the length of your career, do you ever feel intimidated, scared by the challenge of a race? Because understandably, people are talking about what can you do, especially can there be a world record, can you attack Paula Radcliffe's 2:15.25? Do you ever feel daunted by that?
I think I don't have any pressure at all. I'm just here to do my best, to run my good race on Sunday. Although I know it will be going to be a tough event, and for me, I don't have any pressure. I'm just here to try to run my BB, and also because we have a male pacemaker, so I think it will assist us a lot. And we are here to try to follow the footsteps of Paula Radcliffe. So we have to try, but no pressure at all. If we will not make it, it's fine. And if we will try to come closer to it, it's fine. So I'm ready for the race.
There were certainly very good signs in February in the Ras Al Khaimah half marathon. You were second, beaten only by 3 seconds, and personal best in the half. So has the rest of training gone well compared to last year for London 2017?
Yeah, my program has been going on well since I did a half marathon in February, and I did in a PB of 4:55, and it was part of my preparation to London Marathon, so I was happy about it, and I just go back home and put the same continuity to for the program for the marathon.
Do you take care of your body in terms of recovering differently to say what you did 10 years ago? I mean, we all get older, even elite, great distance runners. Do you do anything different in terms of taking care of yourselves to help you get into top shape?
I think what I can say is that it's a lot of discipline, a lot of commitment, passion, and dedication. And that's all about to become a champion. And for me, I can say the very important thing is that to train well and have a focus in whatever you want to achieve, and to maintain what you have been doing. And also to the most important thing is that to be disciplined in whatever you are doing, and you will achieve your goals.
There have been a few races in your career, New York a few years ago, where you went out fast and couldn't quite hold on, whereas London last year you were, well, out on your own from about 5 kilometres, and you were certainly running very fast, 66:54 at halfway. Was that not only something that you've learned, not just physically, but mentally, to harden yourself to say, I can do this?
Yeah, I think I can say that I trained well and I was ready for the race. So for me, I think it was a bit of going fast at the end. And I think for me, I was just keeping in mind that I'm still remembering what I did in 2011 in New York, so I didn't want to do the same. So because I know most of the people was thinking that maybe Mary is just doing the same as New York in 2011. But in any case, I was very ready for the race, and I was to finish my race well. I was not feeling like maybe to stop on the way, because I went with a crazy pace at the beginning. So I was very okay and I was very ready. So I've learned a lesson many times, and also a lot of marathon that I've done. I have a lot of experience, so for me, I was okay.
Well, you were more than okay. Mary Keitany, last year's London Marathon champion, and a lot of expectations and hopes for you and the others in the elite women's field. Mary Keitany, thanks very much for talking to us.
Yeah, welcome. Thanks.
And thanks to the energetic Andy Edwards for that interview with Kenyan athlete Mary Keitany, the defending women's champion in Sunday's London Marathon. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In more sports news, two iconic Olympic athletes have been honored for their human rights activism. Joining us once again with more details is my VOA colleague, Gwen Uden. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. 50 years ago, American Olympians Tommy Smith and John Carlos won gold and bronze medals in the 200-meter sprint at the 1968 Olympics in Mexico City. As they stood on the medal podium, the two men raised their fists in what has become one of the greatest political protests in Olympic history. John Carlos and Tommy Smith were honored at an awards ceremony Tuesday night here in Washington on the 50th anniversary of their Olympic protest. They were given the 2018 Free Expression Award, presented to them by retired NBA legend Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. During the ceremony, Kareem addressed the audience and recalled that moment in 1968 that shook the world.
As the Star Spangled Banner played, Tommy and John bowed their heads and raised their gloved fists in a defiant demand for human rights that echoed around the world. Their protest against the unjust treatment of Black Americans and people of color everywhere was a watershed moment in civil rights history.
The athletes were booed and cursed as they left the podium. The International Olympic Committee strongly condemned their political statement, and as a result, John Carlos and Tommy Smith were banned from the Olympic Village and sent home. They faced death threats and racial abuse upon their return to the United States. Australian sprinter Peter Norman, the silver medalist in that same race, was in support of their protest on that podium. He wore a small badge on his uniform that read Olympic Project for Human Rights, an organization that opposed racism in sport. For his part, Norman was later shunned by the International and Australian Olympic Committees and never ran in an Olympic event again. Peter Norman died in 2006. 6 years after his death, the Australian Parliament recognized Norman's achievements and issued an apology for the treatment he received upon his return to Australia after the 1968 Olympics. In his acceptance speech Tuesday night, John Carlos paid tribute to Norman, who is often regarded as the forgotten man.
50 years ago, I stood on a podium with two individuals, Tommy Smith, another blue-eyed white guy by the name of Peter Norman. And they tried to whitewash him and wipe him out of history like he didn't exist. And then you look back at modern day with young Mr. Kaepernick taking a knee. He wasn't the only one to take a knee. They had some white individuals that took a knee and took their hand and put it on his shoulder and said, I'll lend support to you. They whitewashed all those white football players too to show you that you should not have moral character within your soul and your mind and your spirit to say, I don't care about what your ethnic background is. I don't care about what your economic state is. All I care about is whether you're doing the right thing and God is telling me to support you. It's your turn to step up. It's your turn to get up on the podium one day where I can say, hey, let's get a trophy. Let's get a medal. Let's give it to them because they deserve it.
In his speech, Tommy Smith called on others to join in the fight for equality.
In the face of adversity, the struggle continues. Now, there's many of us look for comfort in non-involvement. But see, you can run, but you cannot hide.
In 2005, a 22-foot-tall statue was erected depicting Tommy Smith and John Carlos in their famous stance. The statue was placed on the campus of San Jose State University in California, where the two men were once students. Before his death, Peter Norman stated that he did not want to be featured as part of the statue so others could stand in his place as a gesture of solidarity. But there is now a statue of all three men at the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture, right here in Washington. Visit Sonny's blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sonny to see a picture of that statue and also the photograph taken at the 1968 Olympics of that famous protest, one of the most iconic sports images of the 20th century. That's all from me. I'll hand it back over to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
They're playing back.
It's time for my Wednesday basketball chat with Mwamoyo Hoops Hamza, the chief of the Voice of America Swahili service. Sporty greetings, Mwamoyo.
Greetings, Sonny. Great to be here again.
First round action heating up in the NBA playoffs, Mwamoyo. Am I wrong when I look at some of these games that there's more international players out there this year?
You are quite right, and this is fascinating stuff, Sonny. There is, in this playoffs, there is a record 62 foreign-born players from 33 countries taking part in the playoffs this year.
Mm.
As a matter of fact, all 16 teams in the playoffs, they have at least one international player. Our teams with the most foreign-born players are Boston Celtics, Toronto Raptors, San Antonio Spurs, with six foreign-born players each. Oh, one other factor. Tony Parker, the Frenchman, and four-time NBA champion with the San Antonio Spurs, he is making his 17th straight playoff appearance.
Wow, 17.
17. So what does this say about the NBA? The fact that the NBA basketball continues to be an international sport with large following from all over the world. People are watching it. Young kids are getting interested in it. They aspire to play in the NBA. And some of them, they get their dream. That's why you have all these foreign-born players in the playoffs.
And also, maybe it has given the league an uptick in terms of attendance this year.
Exactly. The attendance is already, with just the four days of the playoffs, the attendance is in record numbers. You know, this gives them, you know, this international look plus the American, you know, interest, which has always been there. It widens the audience possibilities.
One of the teams you mentioned with a large contingent of foreign-born players, the Philadelphia 76ers. I know we've talked about Joel Embiid from Cameroon. What's his status? I know he's had problems with that orbital fracture around his eye. Are we going to see him in the playoffs?
We're going to see him, but probably not as soon as we want or as soon as he wants, because he has been complaining, you know, sending off a tweet saying that he's tired of being babied. You know, he wants to get into action. And, I mean, you can understand. I mean, this is his first time in the playoffs. He wants to be in action. His team, they are tied now 1-1 with Miami. His team needs him. And this is his chance to get into action. But as we know right now, his status, he's been practicing with the team, but unlikely that he'll play game number 3, which the series are shifting to Miami, but he'll probably be in game number 4 if it continues, you know, number 5 and 6.
Big game for Dwayne Wade in game 2 against the 76ers. I think he had 28 points. Were you surprised by D. Wade's performance?
I wasn't surprised, and that shows you experience. And this is the difference between Miami Heat and Philadelphia 76ers. Philadelphia is a good team. It was the hottest team going into the playoffs with 17 straight wins. But, you know, it's a combination of very young players, inexperienced, and other some veterans like J.J. Redick. But this combination doesn't fit very well with a team that is so much experience, such as the Miami Heat. Miami have so many experience, and being led by somebody like Dwayne Wade, you know, they know how to step up during the playoffs.
You mentioned Embiid. Any other African players you're watching during the playoffs, Mwamoyo?
There are several African players in the playoffs, but the ones who are going to get a lot of attention are Giannis Antetokounmpo from Milwaukee Bucks. You know, originally from Nigeria via Greece, you have Luke Mbamute with Houston Rockets.
Right, right.
He's from Cameroon. Chinanu Onoko of Houston, Nigeria. And your favorite, Victor Oladipo.
Oladipo, yes.
His full name is Kehinde Babatunde Victor Oladipo. Now, he's a U.S. born, His parents are Nigerian and Sierra Leonean. So he grew up here, actually in the area. He was born in Silver Spring, went to Dematha. So he's a local kid. But he's been playing very, very well for Indiana Pacers. And these are some of the African players who are getting a lot of attention in the playoffs this year.
Momoyo, if I can give a shout out for a couple more African players, and they did a number on my Washington Wizards last night. These two players, Serge Ibaka
from Congo.
From Congo. He had a pretty good game against the Wizards last night, 10 points. The Raptors beat the Wizards, so they're up 2-0. And another foreign-born player with ties to Africa, OG Anunoby. I believe he was born in London, but his parents are Nigerian. He plays for the Raptors, and the Raptors right now looks like they own that series, Momoyo.
They own the series. Washington Wizards, they don't seem to have an answer for, you know, what Raptors are bringing. And Raptors, you know, they have, this was the first time they won their opening game of the playoffs, and then they won two in a row. And they have been building this team for many years. They are always coming close, but this time they look like they're, you know, it's a well set team. And Serge Ibaka, as you say, very experienced. He played with the OKC, and he played very fundamental roles in the OKC teams. So, you know, he's giving Toronto Raptors a good. Production, you know, at the center.
Two other games on Tuesday night, Momoyo, and I'll get your thoughts on these series. The Celtics beat the Milwaukee Bucks 120-106. They lead that series now 2-0. And the New Orleans Pelicans, they beat the Portland Trailblazers on Tuesday night 111-102. New Orleans also up 2-0. Let's begin with the Pelicans. What do you think of their playoff chances?
New Orleans, which is a surprise. They have stolen the home court advantage from Portland Trail Blazers. New Orleans went into the playoffs number 6 and Portland are number 3. So they played the first two games in Portland. Now the series are shifting to New Orleans, and they have already won 2 games. So they are going home with 2 games in the pocket. What I love about New Orleans is Rajon Rondo.
The point guard.
The point guard. He is one of the most accomplished point guard in the NBA. And, you know, in the NBA, you rarely find the best point guards being traded. But he won championships with Boston Celtics.
That's right.
And he
was traded.
He bounced around, you know, a few teams. But now he appears to have found his home, and he is playing so well with Anthony Davis. And he knows how to play with big guys. Because remember, when he was with Boston Celtics, he was very vital for Kevin Garnett.
And speaking of the Celtics, they lead the Bucks now 2-0. They won last night. What do you think of the Celtics winning without Kyrie Irving?
And that was a little bit of a surprise. I thought that series was going to be more competitive, but apparently all the other players have stepped up. You know, Jalen Brown,
right.
I mean, he's playing very well. Morris, all the players, who would have been role players if Kyrie was there, you know, they're producing, you know, great. And Milwaukee doesn't seem to have an answer for them.
Finally, Momoyo, I know some people were saying the Golden State Warriors looked vulnerable without Steph Curry, but they're not looking very vulnerable right now.
Remember what they say, never underestimate the heart of the champion. And this is what we're seeing. We're seeing Golden State Warriors, you know, stepping it up. They have the players to step it up. And, you know, so now that's exactly what they're doing. You know, they're facing San Antonio Spurs, which is a little bit depleted. I mean, it's a team that has been there for many years, well coached, but they just don't have the right, you know, pieces for their game to face Golden State Warriors.
Momoyo Hoops Hamza, thanks for chatting with us, Momoyo.
Sure.
And that wraps up the April 18th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Sule Terawali. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
United Nations peacekeeping missions are far more complicated today than when the peacekeeper's job consisted primarily of keeping the warring parties apart. Today's multidimensional peacekeeping operations are called upon not only to maintain peace and security, but also to facilitate the political process, protect civilians, assist in the disarmament, demobilization, and reintegration of former combatants, support the organization of elections, protect and promote human rights, and assist in restoring the rule of law. It is also dangerous work. According to the United Nations last year, 56 of their peacekeepers died as a result of violence. So it makes sense to prepare peacekeepers prior to deployment for the kinds of challenges they will face in real-world peacekeeping operations. In late February and early March, over 1,000 peacekeepers from more than 30 countries took part in Shanti Dut 4. Shanti Dut, which means Ambassador of Peace, is a multinational United Nations peacekeeping exercise designed to familiarize the participants with situations they may encounter during deployment on peacekeeping operations. The exercise took place at the Bangladesh Institute of Peace Support Operation Training, with support from the Global Peace Operations Initiative, a peacekeeping capacity-building program managed by the U.S. Department of State, in partnership with the Department of Defense. The training participants at Shanti Dut 4 had the opportunity to learn from numerous international instructors with extensive real-world peacekeeping experience. The multinational exercises and training sessions provided the opportunity for an exchange of knowledge, skills, and techniques between subject matter experts and international instructors for the benefit of all involved. U.S. Pacific Command and the United States State Department Global Peace Operations Initiative are pleased, indeed honored, to partner with our friends in Bangladesh in support of the training of multinational military forces to conduct real-world United Nations peacekeeping operations, said U.S. Air Force Major General James O. Eifert. Exercise Shanti Dut 4 is one way we continue to enrich the relationship while simultaneously strengthening multinational partnerships around the world.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari says he will seek his party's presidential ticket to contest elections in February 2019, ending months of speculation about his future. The future of 75-year-old Muhammadu Buhari on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront Wednesdays at 17:30 UTC
right here on VOA Africa.
It's been a long week. You worked hard. Probably need a break. I can help you with that. I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. This weekend, tune in and relax, energize, connect with great music and great people from across the African continent. This Sunday's 55-minute program features promising young artists on the rise. There's also music news and a feature song of the week from Ghana this time that will keep you current and hip to what's happening on the continent. So join me this Sunday and the following Saturday at 15:05 and 20:05 UTC. Music time in Africa. Yeah.